You're listening to the Viral Molly Podcast. Now here's your host, Rob, on the mic.
Hey, good day, everyone. I'm Rob Aspero with the Viral Volley Podcast for our, I guess it'd be our first official episode of College Volleyball Weekly. We've got our consortium of collegiate coaching intelligence, David Hunt of Pepperdine University, Dan Friend of Lewis University, and Jay Hossick of George Mason University, all after getting some play. At least two of the three guys have got some play under their belts. But let's just start off with some of the top news of the conference. Since our last meeting in the last week of December, the NVA AVCA D12 men's preseason poll came out. What are your guys' thoughts on where everyone stood in regards to that? And I'll start with Coach Hunt.
Hold on.
Oh, Jay's got something.
Hang on. Uh-oh. How long is that intro to the D1 poll?
Sponsorships, Jay. Cool. Yeah, we got to make money somehow. Damn.
Holy smokes. All right. Well, hey. Thanks, NBA. Appreciate it. But, man, we add a lot to that whole thing. Okay.
Go ahead. Could add more, too, if the price is right.
I thought you were going to talk about how Princeton made the poll and they're not even playing. I thought that
well, we could talk about that, impressive. Too.
Hawaii made the women's poll, right? And they're not playing either. Yeah. I wish I was that good.
Well, let's go. What do you think, Coach Hunt?
Yeah, the thing that I'm going to be a little bit torn about is everybody has a different start date. So, you know, my two colleagues here, you've already started playing. We start playing tonight. But what about the teams that haven't released schedules yet? What happens if they don't play till March? Are they still in the top 15? It's going to be over 360 days since they've played. And then, you know, just personally, I have a hard time. It's this year's poll. It's not last year's poll. So those teams are very talented. I don't want to mix my words. Those teams are real talented. But at a certain point, it's the 2021 poll. And we got to start looking at 2021. Now I understand that different start dates and nobody controls that, but that's going to be the confusing one for me. So I think it's accurate based on what we saw last year, but in terms of this year, in a few weeks, my guess is it's going to be vastly different.
All right. How about you, Coach Friend?
Yeah, it's just funny. Like, I actually just did my poll for this coming week and Dave's exact thoughts. I'm looking at it and I'm like, well, you got handful of schools of play. These schools aren't playing. And I'm like, what's this going to look like coming up? And so, but accurate as it could be, I thought it was pretty good in terms of where it started off at. And so, and then you just got to see how it all unfolds over the next few weeks and teams don't end up playing. Do those teams kind of get bumped down for a little bit until they do? And then certainly they could, you know, a lot of times you don't see big jumps on the poll, but that could be one of those things where, hey, a few teams move down for a little bit, then they start playing and they jump up pretty high again. And so just to do, you know, honor to the other teams that are playing in terms of that.
How about you, Jay?
Yeah, no, I echo those sentiments. I think there's a couple of different factors that will come into play. First, I think the first week's poll really is based upon what last year's results were. And I think that's just a sign of respect for everybody out there that is bringing those kids back and giving them a shot. I think you'll see it kind of like what the FCS football did, where as teams were competing and as teams were not, there's a large shuffle going on in the top teams and they were dropping out of the rankings. And then as they were playing and as they were beating teams or losing to teams, then they would fall accordingly. And the challenge that a lot of us face, especially on the East Coast, you know, is that, you know, a lot of people will base the polls based upon what they think rather than what they know. And there's obviously a large West Coast bias that goes on with that. And we understand that. It's not terrible. It is what it is, but as things start to change, people start to see other teams from the East, the Midwest going out there, doing some really good things. And you started to notice the last year or two, some of the mainstays are dropping out of the polls and some new teams are starting to, you know, whittle their way up there. And I think that's just a sign of where men's volleyball is going in general. But yeah, I think the polls, rankings are really nothing more than just kind of a popularity game to some degree. And all coaches know that it doesn't mean you're going to win a match just because you're ranked higher. If anything, it just puts more butts in the seats, which that's always a good thing.
Well, I'm seeing just our next question we're going to discuss is there are some significant changes to some of the teams last year are going to affect them majorly. For instance, Long Beach State sitting at number four in the preseason poll. Carlos Rivera, their starting setter last year, isn't even on the roster for this year. You got UCLA post Kofi era, and Mads Kia Jensen now playing in professionally in Italy. Garrett Zolg's back for Loyola. You have Angelos Mandalaris, who transferred over to Ball State. I mean, no one really knows what's going to happen with all these changes. What are your guys' thoughts on this uncertainty and all of these changes? We'll start with David.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. There's a lot of movement, and then also there's a lot of kids that just came back and got better. You know, at least in our gym, I'm assuming that in lots of other people's gyms, where guys came in and improved. I watched Dan's team because Dan played early in the week, and you know, I see guys that were on his roster didn't necessarily play a lot last year, but all of a sudden they're contributing at a really high level. So I think it's not just our gym; it's going to be other people's gyms as well. And that part of that has to do with where they were when they went home, their access to things, you know, what could they do, what could they not do. So I think even though guys are coming back and rosters look very similar, I think the dynamics are going to be vastly different.
Anyone else have anything else to add?
I'm going to ask Jay. Like, I was shocked Angelos wasn't playing. I was like, man, this guy's going to be on that team, and I'm really excited to see what they look like that. And that was one of my teams that I was just surprised. I didn't know about the Carlos thing. I was hoping Dave would shed some light since he's closer. Yeah, Jay, did you talk to Walton, or do you know anything with Angelos or any of that?
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is really public knowledge, but let's just put it this way. You're probably not going to see Mandalaris play for Ball State this year, and I'll leave the reason why up to Joel or any of the team that wants to discuss that. And it was a personal decision, and quite frankly, it might be the right one for him professionally moving down the line. I too am concerned as to why Carlos Rivera isn't on the Long Beach roster. They only have one setter listed. And obviously I don't think Allen's going to just have one setter in there. And if you know Allen, you know, I don't think he's necessarily playing favorites and telling everybody else, hey, there's no reason to come here. My son is going to be the setter. Aiden's capable, but there has to be another guy in the gym that's helping him run it. So that would be interesting to see. But there's a lot of setters and a lot of kids at last year transfer places and are no longer on rosters. The kid from Barton, the setter Fiorentino, went to Concordia. Now he's not on the roster there either. So it makes you wonder what's going on. You know, was there some ulterior motives going on, or did kids really not make the roster, or were the coaches like, hey, we got too many guys here and administration's unhappy? Is it COVID related? There's just a lot of questions.
I think there's a lot of unknown there too, in terms of testing costs, right? I think it's costing us, I think, close to $10,000 a week to test. So, you know, what are the budgets looking like for universities? Those are all things outside of volleyball that are probably affecting it as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything else to add, Dan?
No, I just, you're going to get in the guys that are playing though too, which we're going to talk about here in a second, like Zolig, you know, in a Loyola again, which is great to see after an injury year. But you know, I think there's some added pieces to rosters as this unfolds a little bit that are going to be exciting to see. So,
well, that's a great segue, because, you know, Loyola didn't even get any votes in the poll, the preseason poll. And I think a big piece of that, their success, relies on Garrett Zolg, who didn't play last year. No mention, but I mean, obviously 2-0 weekend for Loyola. How are they looking, Dan? I mean, they're in your conference, and I'm sure we all dialed into that stream. We'll start with you, Dan.
Well, it's funny. We watched that prep for Lincoln, you know, and I was like, please don't watch Loyola. Please watch Lincoln. I'm fully aware of this. But a little bit I paid attention to. I have a lot of respect for Zola. He's a great player, makes that team churn and go. And they've got some young outsides and an opposite now. It's got a couple of years under their belt. So they're certainly going to be, you know, pretty good from the pins this year. And I think they're going to do some damage. So, like I said, Jay brought up a good point. You know, we both go on the road and we're going to face this beast of the East and a St. Francis team that was missing their star Fisher player that'll probably be back in the lineup, which will be a much different St. Francis team. And so I think it'll be a good test for both our teams in the sense of just, you know, playing at another high level of volleyball. So,
you know, and keep this in mind, Rob, you know, a lot of people, if you watch matches from this weekend and maybe prior weekend with St. Francis, you're seeing some teams that historically may have had some starting guys that you would see throughout the course of the season and getting better. And there were a lot of new kids in the lineup, a lot of top starters that were not playing on various teams. And somebody asked me this weekend, you know, why wasn't so-and-so playing? Why wasn't so-and-so playing? What happened to this kid? Well, here's the reality. We haven't played volleyball in 315 days against anybody except ourselves. Normally all these teams get four contact dates in the fall, you know, and usually mm-hmm. 2 to 3 of them are tournament days. So you're getting multiple opportunities to put multiple kids in and see what they can do. I mean, it's not fair to go into this new season and go, well, these are just our starters and these are the only guys we're going to play. That's not fair to the other kids that are putting in all the work. And so you're seeing coaches go, hey, these non-conference matches, yeah, we want to win. And, you know, we're going to do everything we can, but I want to do my fair, you know, share of due diligence here and see what these kids can do when they're under pressure. And then as the season wears on and as they get into conference, when things really start to matter the most, that's mm-hmm. when you're going to see lineups kind of settle down a little bit and get back to what people are normally used to seeing.
Well, there goes my topic card thing, for that Jay, one.
The other thing, Jay, with that, and you know that this weekend was like, it's so much different. Like we played 3 matches in 4 or 5 days and like you guys played 2 matches in 2 days. And it's like, that's just a different grind on the guys. They haven't done it for a year. You know what I mean? And so now all of a sudden, I don't care what you do in practice and how you condition, the mental grind and the physical grind of a live match and what that does to you. If Lincoln Memorial pushes us to 4 or 5, we're in trouble. Because like I could see the wear on us because we just hadn't done it before. And we'll be better next week in back-to-back, but we hadn't done it yet in so long. It's such a different piece. So
yeah, no, that's 100% true.
Anything to add there, David?
No, I think that's right on. And for most of us, you know, you're just going to have to be good at the very end of the season for 3 straight days, right? So I think that's the fan side versus the coach's side, right? The fans, you know, or as a volleyball fan, you want to watch high level volleyball all the time. But as a coach, you're thinking long-term and you're thinking, hey, I just need the best guys or my best group at the end of the year for 3 straight days. And that's when we need to play good volleyball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from a volleyball layperson or even parent standpoint, we're like, why isn't Greenslade playing again? He was the beast mode player of the night. What's that Hossack thinking? But I mean, you hear the chatter.
On my Facebook page?
Well, I'll go there next time when people are yelling about you. But I mean, I know that you as coaches are making adjustments, and some people who are rational and thought like, you know what, they just want to see what they've got, because who knows what could happen this season. And, you know, I've been working some basketball games to, you know, put some food on the table, and there hasn't been the same lineup for the starting teams consistently for a month now. So, you know, people are getting tested, and there's so many different circumstances that are affecting the way you guys are having to manage your teams. And I don't honor the position you guys are in right now.
Listen, the reality is this, you know, people that know, people that don't know, calm down. I don't go into your work and tell you how to do your job. Just trust that we know what we're doing as coaches. We're okay.
Spoken truly from Jay. All right. I'm going to go to an EIVA team, which we've referred to a couple times now. I think it's more like a dark horse beast of the East, NJIT. And we're going to start with David since he's the farthest away from NJIT.
Yep.
I know you got intel because you're in the game.
I don't have any intel on him. We were supposed to play him originally.
I'm writing this down. I'm ready. Do you want to read
intel? Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Don't expect anything great ever. So, yeah, I mean, we were supposed to play them. So we were aware of how good they were originally before, I mean, months and months ago, light years ago. And they were good last year. I mean, they swept SC at your place, right, Jay?
Yep.
Yep. So, I mean, it's not a shock. I think the setter that somebody referenced, I think he is real good, at least from what I remember. You know, he's a big, long athlete. And, yeah. So it shouldn't be a shock. I don't think it is a shock to anybody. It's just a name that people aren't used to hearing, but they're going to be good.
All right. Go to Coach Dan there at Lewis.
God, I mean, I got to scout them. So they got a lot of good guys. So I'm just glad I'm not playing them first in Loyola is, because they haven't played a match yet. And so at least I get to have a match. They'll have 3 matches on us. Do you know what I mean? And so the fact that they're going to play one before we get going, we got a new setter in the mix, and I think that's an important cog in the wheel. And we already know they got, you know, the pins and a couple good pieces and a good middle, and, you know, a couple good middle trees. So I just, you know, I think in a coach's dream world, for me, it's like each of my matches have gotten better as we've progressively played, you know what I mean? And so mm-hmm. And then we're going to play St. Francis, which is super fast and comfortable at home, and then we're going to go in the NJIT, which is, you know, I think 2 big teams. And so, you know, even if I wasn't the coach of one, you look at it and you go, we got 2 big physical teams. How's this going to play out in terms of that? And so it should be an exciting match. So,
Yeah, that center at NJIT, Roque Nieto, is who I'm hoping to see somehow, some way on a stream. But he was eye-catching last year. He got a really good performance, all at least for the limited amount of time that we played last year. So definitely a team to watch. And we'll finish up with Jay, who gets to see his team two, three times, right, NJIT?
Yeah, I get to see him four times. Thanks for reminding me, Rob. no, listen, Danny Goncalves has done such a nice job with that program and their new AD, or not new now, but new back in the day when he came on. Lenny Kaplan has really put some resources into that program. That athletic department built a whole brand new gym facility. It's beautiful. Seats 5,000 people. They've got a bigger TV than the Dallas Cowboys facility. It's and you know what they've done is they've allowed him to recruit out of country, which, you know, when you looked at that team last year, I think they had one kid on the court at one time that was from the States. The rest of them are all foreign or Puerto Rican. And
the Spaniard, because Jimeno is from Spain.
Jimeno is ridiculous. I hate love that kid. And every time I see him, I want to punch him in the face because he's so good. But
for the record, the show does not accept violence.
Send all hate mail to the guy below me. No, he's a great kid. He is a fiery competitor, plays on the Spanish senior national team in the summer, 6'9", built like a truck, long and lean, just a real, real good player, and would start on a large percentage of programs around the country. And their Polish opposite's a lefty that was a freshman last year, and he is really good too. He's wiry, he's got reach. You know, and then you've got Luca Berger in the middle, and you've got another Spaniard middle that's younger. And they're just solid all the way around. And, you know, hats off to them. People who look at NJIT and go, oh, it's NJIT, don't understand what NJIT is doing. And they're not, they don't understand that some of these lesser known universities across the country, and I mean that with all due respect, their bread and butter is finding these foreign kids that want to go play in the States. And some of these D2 schools in the Carolinas have got a whole handful of them that are really good. Some of the smaller programs around the country, if they're smart, they're getting these foreign kids, and they are solid. And NJIT is a team that is a dark horse, and probably not so dark in my eyes, but they're a definite dark horse that if you're not paying attention, they're fun to watch, and they're going to be really, really good this year.
Yeah, they're like a Italian League A2 roster. I'm going through the names. I'm like, wait a second. There's maybe like three or four Americans on that team.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly tough school to get into. NJIT is a really good engineering and technical school. So, you know, that Danny's doing the right things. He's finding the right kids and putting together a program that, you know, if you're not paying attention, if you're not smart and you overlook them just because of the name, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
Offensively, last year they put up some ridiculous numbers too. There were some matches where they were hitting 500 for the entire match. So
yeah, and we beat them last year in four, and it was not easy by a long shot. And we were happy to walk away with that W. They are really good.
It was a good week on Craigslist and recruiting players for your squad.
That week, maybe. I was going to ask if one of them could have suited up for our team last year. That's how low we were. But yeah, no, it's really a testament to Danny and what he's done with that team, and they're just doing really, really good things. And I'm glad to see that they're getting a chance to branch out and play some teams around the country instead of what they used to do, which is, you know, pick up a couple of D3s in the Northeast because their AD at the time wasn't really going to spend the money. Now they're able to start spending the money, and they're starting to host teams, and they're starting to travel a little bit, and that's just going to be better for him in the future. So hats off to him.
Excellent. Hey, next topic in our random news, but here it is. What's taken the Big West so long to come out with, whether it's on or not? We'll start farthest away this time, Jay. One day we'll start in the middle, Dan, but we'll just start with Jay and we'll go backwards to the West Coast.
You know, it's my understanding that the Big West men's side was waiting to see what the Big West women's side was saying. And I know that recently the Big West has decided that they're not going to play the women's volleyball matches, which I'm a little confused as to why that is. If you're going to have the men's team, is there a reason why you don't have the women's team? Is it, you know, trying to do an equal thing where the men's team didn't have a season last year, so now the women's team isn't going to have one? And I don't know why they would make that decision. So I don't think that's the reason. But the reason they were waiting was they wanted to make sure that they had all the ducks in a row. They're only playing conference. They're not even doing really any out of conference much at all. I know that the Southern California teams will, but other than that, there's not a ton of crossover. But you know, the Big West, I think, starts conference play at the beginning of March, if I'm not mistaken. And they've got to get.
I haven't seen anything yet official. I mean, yeah, that's the chatter. Yeah. But that's all I'm asking you guys.
And I know Stanford, and Dave could probably talk about this. I know Stanford's not starting till March, and they've got to get all of their, 15 or 16 matches, Dave, that you were talking about the other day, within 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we're all trying to play 18, right? And I think everyone's understanding of everyone else's situation. So with this being Stanford's last year, they're trying to get as many, obviously, as they can. But regulations, Santa Clara County is being really difficult. But I believe they're all back on campus now, testing, quarantining, and expecting to play the first match in Malibu on, I think, March 3rd. So that'll be their first match, and that'll be our 11th match. So, yeah.
Let's go over to Dan over there and his thoughts on the Big West situation.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I read it on Bally Talk that they were going to play. How about that?
You know, the official source.
Outside of that, I was so focused in on just us getting started that I haven't really talked to any of the coaches, or I don't have any hearsay. And so, and you know, Bally Talk's my resource for everything. I think Dave might have a better idea if he's talked to anybody out there in terms of that. And I think all the hang up was just what's going on in California and those trying to make decisions. And I would go with Jay. My guess is like the stress on the athletic department was like, hey, we don't want to try to do women and men, and the men already lost their season. So we're going to focus in on men and not do the women's. That's the only thing I could come up with from the AD perspective on that. So,
okay. Well, I know David Ray said some stuff already, but do you have anything else to add on top of that?
Yeah, I mean, anything, just dealing with it with the MPSF schools, you know, it's, I think a lot of it is the counties that these universities are in, you know, and just the complications of what each county is requiring. Like I said, Santa Clara County is basically saying if you travel outside of Santa Clara County more than 150 miles, you're not allowed back in, or you can't come back in and practice. I mean, there's just some bizarre things. So my guess is just the varying rules across California. Most of them are in California. And then, you know, you got to look at added costs. The cost to test your athletes and compete is two things that I think lots of universities are struggling with. So,
yeah. Well, I know from the Stanford on the College Volleyball Weekly Beach Edition, I've got Charlie Ekstrom who plays beach, and she should be coming at the end of their quarantine. They're back on campus. So hopefully everything works out smoothly for all the athletes there so they can get their season going. Before we jump on to the matches of the week, was there anything else that we may have overlooked? And we'll leave this up open forum for you guys. Anything stick out or come out?
TJ Murray. I just had to say his name.
He did have a good night, though. I did see that.
He's all right. I just got to say his name. Otherwise, they might say something to me later in the day. So.
Every week, TJ Murray.
Yeah. It's like Kenny on South Park. Every episode, he's got to be killed. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's go into week two matches. What were your top matches of week two? But I got to ask before we start talking about that, how has it been for your teams? Oh, not so much for you, David, but playing with face masks and face coverings, because I think that's a mandatory requirement now for your conferences. We'll start with you, Jay, since you started first because your time zone.
I'll be honest with you. We practice with them occasionally just so the guys can get used to them. But when you're playing, your adrenaline's flowing. It's really not that big of a deal. The mandate is that obviously you pull it up before the serve. As the play develops, you know, depending on the length of the play and if you're really involved or not, the thing could fall down and it just is what it is. They're not going to stop play at that moment for you to pull it back up and then continue the play. They're just going to let you play the point, and at the end you pull it back up and you start the next point. The guys are fine with it. At least my team is. I haven't heard any complaints. And, you know, I think it's just going to be one of those things where 30 years from now, we're sitting on a rocking chair and we're, you know, talking about what was. We're going to remember this year and go, remember when we had to play with masks? Now there was a story. So,
yeah. How about you, Dan?
The guys have dealt with it. I mean, we've been doing it with practice since we started. So, and we just understanding if you need to take a breath, take a breath. You know what I mean? So, and they've been really good about it. And I don't think the officials are looking at it and doing anything. They understand if a guy needs to put his hand up and take a step back to take a breath, they're really good with it about that. And so, and I think it's just one of those things. I think we told our team, like, you're going to have a lot of challenges in your ability to kind of stay at a high level with all this stuff, no matter what the challenges will be really important. And it'll be important for the teams that are successful at the end. I think that the weirder thing is the bench stuff. Like, our administration was all worried. Like, we, you know, we have a large team and we redshirt some guys, you know, and our gym is small. So we had to, this is the first time I had to remove my red shirts from the bench. I mean, and we don't have any fans right now, and our red shirts were fantastic about it. They go to the other side, you know, and the first night they're cheering everything. The second night they go, coach, can we dress up? I'm like, sure. So they wear Hawaiian shirts. And so they've taken it in stride, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I watched Jays and Ball State, and they were at the end. They wanted us and our bench to kind of be separated by the chairs. And I think that was more of a weird thing than the mass thing for us, because it's like we're so used to just being at the end next to each other. I don't know, the guys do the airplane or they celebrate or whatever they're doing. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that's been the, that was a different, all the pregame figuring out the game stuff was a little bit weirder than saying, hey, we got to wear a mask and play right now. And so, but yeah.
You know, Dan, I'd be impressed if your guys came dressed up as bounty hunters like Boba Fett, Jango Fett, and the Mandalorian instead, and we're heckling.
I might have enough masks that we can do that, just so you know.
All right, David, anything to add? I know you haven't played in a competition
yet,
but the mask issue?
We actually don't practice in masks, and we're not playing in them tonight. That's not a conference rule for us. So I think the Pac-12 has said that matches they participate in, they're going to require, but we don't require that. BYU, I don't think we'll require that. I don't know about GC or Concordia. So we haven't had that issue yet. We practiced a little bit when we first came back in them, but I've been more concerned about sort of what Dan has talked about, the bench spacing. And you might see a lot of guys with water bottles in their hands, you know, because if they're getting a drink, then they don't have to have their mask on. So maybe they just hang out with a water bottle the whole time. But I called Jay and said, Jay, you know, is there anything I should be, you know, worried about or anything different? So we'll see after tonight. I think lots of things are going to be different, but that's just this year.
Yeah. Well, I have to round out this topic with this question for Jay, but why neck gaiters and not actual masks?
I left it up to the guys what they wanted, what they were more comfortable with. And we're like Dave, we don't wear masks usually during practice during the week. And then if the day before they want to wear it just to kind of get back in the swing of things, but it's really their own preference. I even purchased some team masks that have some logos on them that we're supposed to get this week. And they may literally go, nah, it's not that comfortable. I don't know. I'm taking a chance. So, but yeah,
that's fine. If not that, it turns into a George Mason fundraiser.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're selling masks.
Hey, are we ready? I'm good. I'm ready to go. So
there you go.
I was waiting for the Boba Fett mask.
I'll tell you one of the biggest challenges, and I forgot to mention this to Dave, is that, you know, we are so used to our gyms when it's a broken play, especially, you know, in transition, about yelling about what play we want. And now it's a little bit tougher to hear. And some of the young guys are starting to figure out, if I'm not yelling louder than I am now, I'm probably not going to get set much. And so the rhythm's a little bit off for some of the guys.
Yeah.
You're miscommunicating a little bit, but yeah, that, other than that, it's not a big deal.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's go into our matches. Were there any surprises, shockers, upsets in your eyes? And we'll start East and go. Actually, no, let's start with Dan this time.
There you go.
Thanks. Well, I think, like I talked about earlier, when we King beating St. Francis twice and, you know, Josh Kim having a good night, I think, you know, that was on the road at St. Francis. That gym's a tough gym to play in, St. Francis is, you know what I mean? And so, and King to get two Division I wins on the road shows the growth Ryan Brewer has continued to have with that program and the success that they've had. And so I thought that was really, really good for them.
Yeah, Kim hit 19 kills, hit 378 against Francis on night two. So good night for him. How about you? We'll go to, let's change it up a little bit. We'll go to David.
You know what? I watched Dan's team play. They looked real clean in terms of block defense wise. I thought they were pretty organized and doing some good stuff. I watched Penn State, Ohio State. The first night there wasn't too much volleyball being played. There was a lot of service errors, but I would expect
46 in a three set match.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to expect the same thing to happen. And I say that, but it's going to happen tonight in our own gym. And I'm almost going to have a heart attack. And Marv's going to yell at me tomorrow morning about, do you not work on serving? You serve the ball in the court. So and I was looking forward to night two. And then I thought Penn State played a completely different lineup. So I was a little bit of a letdown for me in terms of a volleyball fan, because I was thinking, all right, you know, how does each team respond? What changes do they make? But I guess they got two more this upcoming weekend, so I'll have to wait, you know, six more days to get to watch that. But again, just a lot of volleyball on TV, which was really fun to watch, men's and women's. And Volleyball Magazine's done a great job of putting all the links up, and, you know, makes it real easy to just click and show it, you know, and stream it to the TV. So that was cool.
Shameless plug, I know. All right, Jay, how about you? Upsets, shockers, surprises?
First off, I got to give Dave a little bit of a history thing here. You know what? We got to work on serving. We got to work on that. So that's the best Marv impression I can do.
There you go.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you. I was with Dave watching Ohio State, Penn State, and you know, some people are concerned with why, again, the lineups were changed or ask questions why I was saying, and really it just goes back to same thing for us. It's like, hey, we got to get multiple kids in and see what people can do. And, you know, when you play, if you were to play a non-conference team four times in a week, probably not going to play the same team the entire time, even though you may think, you know, to the average fan, you may think, oh, well, you know, you're going to get better and you're going to get, you know, get some rhythm down, whether it means nothing, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it means nothing. And Penn State's going to get a lot of experience for these young guys. And that could pay off dividends down the line, especially because we don't know who's going to test positive or if anybody is, or, you know, what the case is. So I think for me, the those matches were probably surprising yet not surprising, to say the least. And yeah, congratulations to Ryan Boer at King, doing some nice things down there. And, you know, St. Francis, again, missing a couple of their key starters. But, you know, hey, it is what it is. Good win.
Yep.
Hey, Rob, one other thing. I don't know if anybody watched Jay's match on the first night, but they were down 23-13.
12-2 run.
Yeah. They come back. They win that. They flip the script. They win that match. So, Jay, kudos to your guys for staying in there on that game and coming back and making a run. So,
Ended on a service error, right? That was, could have been challenged.
No, it wasn't close. It was out by about maybe a half a foot or a foot. So it wasn't really
a BYU foot or a sea level foot.
Wow, well played there. I didn't even think about that. A BYU foot. Is that like Canadian exchange rate? Is that how it works? No, you know, we were down 13-21, and just made some, you know, some errors that cost us a little bit. And we talk in our gym all the time. You never know when the magic's going to happen. You just got to keep steady and work on the next point. And Sam Greenslade, showing the veteranship that he has and a leadership, went back there and just did his thing. He's a good server and he knows how to place it in good spots. And, you know, we played some good defense. We finally slowed their opposite down a little bit that night. And, you know, those are some things that, you know, when you put them all together and you just keep focusing on the next thing, instead of worrying about what, if we don't get this, then we got to get more next time. I think, you know, great things can happen. So yeah, kudos to my team. I was happy with that.
Well, the next question for you guys is, I know we mentioned some names already in the volleyballmag.com piece and even just in our conversations, but who were the top performers in week two in your eyes? We'll go back to Jay first, and then we'll go through Dan and then to Dave.
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to pick two from my gym because I thought they were pretty cool performances. One is my, you know, redshirt freshman, Jack Bowles. You know, he was recruited by Ball State at one point and then chose to come to Mason instead. So for him to have his collegiate debut against Ball State, that was pretty fun. He had a pretty good weekend overall. Super happy for him. But I'll be honest with you. Their opposite, Blake Reardon, tore us apart. And I think he had 25 or 26 kills the second night. And we just did not have an answer for him. So, you know what I'm going to be doing this week? I'm going to be watching somebody's blocking defense down there and see what they're doing differently than what we're doing differently. other than having, you know, 6'10 TJ Murray out there with, you know, Tyler Mitchum.
There's enough. TJ Murray can drop again. He's going to go viral.
We're covering next week just in case we forget. So,
all right, Dan, how about you? top players, performers.
Like I talked about, Josh Kim was really good. We talked about him. We'll give him another plug. You know what I mean? He was over 4 points, over four kills, hit 372, had one really good night. And then the other guy is Cole from Loyola for sure. 5 points. He was really good carrying those guys to two ends. And I'll give a plug for my own guy, you know, Mitchum hitting 600 at almost three kills, blocking 1.9 balls. That guy was a beast. You know what I mean? So in terms of that, and so, but yeah.
And then we'll go over to Dave Pepperdine.
Yes. I've mentioned it a few times. Dan's block D I think is pretty good. I think one of the keys is having a bunch of guys that are 6'10 and long. That helps your block defense, Jay. So if you could find guys walking around Mason's campus that are 6'10, that might help. So they did a nice job. And then when I was watching Ohio State, I thought their middle, Clark, is it? Is that his name? He had a few nice plays. I don't know, you know, sort of the coaching eye coming into play, and maybe that's what I'm going to have to do for the polls. You know, I'm not necessarily looking at his hitting stats or what he's blocking, but just, you know, he passes the eye test for me when he's just doing some nice stuff. He served the ball pretty well and did some nice things attacking wise.
Samuel Clark, 6'6" middle from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, he was doing some real nice stuff. So they've done a nice job with him.
Well, you know, this isn't going to turn into the Lewis Flyer show, but a name that came up that wasn't Koonin, Mitchum, or TJ Murray was Landon Krause. Who is that? Ooh. 18 kills, 3 errors, 577, 3 block assists. Come on. Where'd this guy come from, and where'd you pull him out from?
Just keep watching.
Oh, he's the secret weapon of the future. I see.
Yeah. Yeah, so he didn't play earlier in the week. He had a concussion. He was out for 10 days.
Wow. Well, quite a performance on Saturday night.
Yeah, he got one game in Friday. That's the day he got released. And then, so, yeah.
Only 10 days? You pulling a Mahomes over there and just, like, rushing him through? A guy gets a concussion arm, Jim. He's out for 2 months.
NFL reference. I like it. Congratulations, KC.
Well, Koonin punched him in the side of the head, you know what I mean? And so the kid just goes
violence in Lewis's gym, rushing kids back. I don't know what program you're running, Dan.
That Southside Chicago mentality, man.
Yeah, Southsiders.
Yeah.
Dan's got a few good opposites. Keaton Long played one of a match, looked pretty good. You got Cole Brilhart out there.
Keaton played a match, and then in warm-ups on Friday, he rolls his ankle, and then Landon's coming out, so he goes. But, you know, both –
did Koonin trip him or something? Is that what you got going on?
Koonin's brute force, man.
Yeah, well, just
– on your heart. Hey,
you want to know how you get better at block defense? We're a little aggressive, I guess. You're, so.
Well, maybe I'm not going to watch you guys blocking so I don't ruin my season again with injuries.
Yeah, smart.
All right, well, here's the next question of the week. But what matches will you be watching? I'm going to say pick 1 to 3, depending on your mojo this morning. But, you know, I'm going to draw the most obvious one. It's the only one I'm going to say. It's this team called Concordia playing at Pepperdine. And it's because it's the first West Coast match. I'll get that off so you can talk about it, Dave. We'll start with you on your top three to watch this week.
Yeah, I'm excited for our own match tonight. And then we run it back against Concordia. I think we're playing them 4 times in the first 3 weeks. So we'll get familiar with them, and they return everybody. So they'll be pretty good. And then UCLA starting their season, MPSF starts to kick it off. UCLA, Grand Canyon, two real good teams. I think that one's an early one. So that'll be streaming on the TV before all the other matches. 11 a.m.
on Friday, Saturday, Friday.
Yeah. So, I mean, just, you know, obviously I'll be paying attention. We're only playing West or our MPSF schedule. So I'll be watching all the MPSF teams, but I'm just excited to have something going on out here. That's for sure.
All right. Let's go to Dan. What are your top 1 to 3 matches for the week to watch?
Well, I'll kind of piggyback. I mean, certainly start to watch Dave's team. But then, you know, we already talked about UCLA. You know, I think, Jay, I think, plays Barton, right? I think that's coming up in a match. So it's like Barton lost a couple pieces, but they do some great things. So it's kind of seeing how they rebounded a little bit in terms of that. And so that'll be key from that standpoint. And so, and then, I mean, I got to plug our own. It's us and Loyola going to play NGIT, the Beast of the East, and St. Francis, probably with a couple guys back in the lineup. So, and it's at St. Francis' gym, all those matches. And so I think that'll be for some great volleyball.
Now, I got to ask you on those two NJIT matches with you and Loyola, why are they, I think at the times are scheduled 12 p.m. Eastern and 2:30 p.m. Eastern with you guys playing at noon and then Loyola playing at 2:30. That's a
I think you're going to see a lot of that. Like we play Ohio State later in the year at one or two. I just think, you know, with the juggling of all the gym stuff going on and everything that they're trying to do and, you know, managing basketball and volleyball and all that stuff, I told the guys, we're going to have to get used to, you know, playing back to back, playing at different times. It's not the normal evening times. And it's just kind of how it is. And who knows, maybe we garnish some fans because there's so many other things going on. It's like, well, I don't even go on at 12. I'm going to check out this match. I think Jay's match on last Friday was at 12 o'clock and I was able to kind of pop it on and go watch it. And so, and I just think it's with all the gym stuff and everything, people are trying to balance stuff out. So
yeah, I'm a little jealous. We're playing at 7 and I'm like, we got to wait that long. I'm usually in bed by 8, you know, and it's just, yeah, I wish we were playing at 3 o'clock, and I think it'll be nice for the coaches. It won't be these late nights where you're in the office until midnight watching it after the match. So, yeah, I'm a little upset. We got to talk to our people about getting our matches at like 3 or noon or something.
All right, let's close out with Jay and his top matches to watch this upcoming week.
Yeah, Dan hit it on the head with the 12 noon start for us because of all the impactful schedules of all the other sports being condensed into the 5 months. And you're right, Dave, getting off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and going home and, you know, having a dinner at a regular hour and not have it be a late night snack at 11:30 with a video going in front of you. It's kind of nice. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if it's going to change forever, but I certainly enjoyed it. I got 3 matches I'm going to be watching this week. I'm going to be watching Grand Canyon with Pepperdine because Grand Canyon, Worley's doing a nice job out there. Gianni's going to be back. He's got a few pieces that have come back with him. They're going to be a solid team. And I know that, you know, they're not necessarily the glamorous names of the MPSF and those glamorous names will remain nameless because everybody knows who they are, but Grand Canyon's doing some good things. I want to see them. I'm definitely going to be watching NJIT against both Lewis and Loyola. NJIT is a team that is on the rise and is going to be a handful in the years to come. And I'm going to be watching Penn State, Ohio State again, and not because I necessarily want to scout Penn State, but I want to see what's going on with both sides in terms of how many guys deep are they. Like when I'm doing a scouting report, you know, we have the top 6 or 7 guys, maybe 8 guys if a guy comes in on a regular basis. But if I got to do a scouting report for 12 guys, that's going to be a real pain. So I'm kind of looking to see, are these guys just wants to get in there and get them a little experience, or are these guys that are actually going to be carrying some load? And so I'm just going to be keeping an eye on those things.
Good stuff. I'm surprised this one wasn't mentioned, but I think it was in our volleyballmag.com piece, but I'm only going to say my one, and that's USC at UCLA. It's not that I won't be watching yours and you guys aren't matches. I'm already on that, but there's been so much transition on UCLA's end and no one really knows about what USC is going to come out with. So it's like that big question mark, what's it going to look like? And that's what I'm intrigued by that match. So I'll be watching that one. And that is 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Saturday. So, yeah, that's an early start for me, but that means no surfing this weekend, but, I can do that for the game. So, now with that, week 3 will be the start of some of the conference play for the MEVA. Is that right? And Conference Carolinas has some conference play already, in the logbooks. I think the EIVA, correct, as well in the,
They're still, we're not starting EIVA play until the first weekend in February. So everybody's still non-conference for us.
Oh, I have a Sacred Heart Engit match on Friday the 5th.
That's the first weekend at conference.
Right. The following week. So this is the last tune-up for everyone before conference play starts. So before we end the show, I just wanted to ask each of you coaches, and going forward, what are your strategies in managing lineups, modified schedules, potential COVID cancellations, quarantines, and lockdowns? We'll start with the just a tragic coast right now, the West Coast with Dave Hunt.
Damn. In terms of the COVID stuff, I mean, it's just whatever our doctors tell us. You know, I don't question them, just like they don't tell me what rotation to start in when we get to the match. So we have a good understanding. If they tell us something, we do it. In terms of rescheduling, we have 4 MPSF teams in Southern California. We sort of have a handshake agreement that we're going to try to reschedule with each other. If we need, if it's a last second deal and we need to go somewhere, try to accommodate each other. Everyone's been really good about that. And then what's your other part of that, Rob, that you're asking? In terms of lineups and lineups and competitively. I mean, I'm trying to win every match, you know. I mean, all of our matches count towards our conference, and ultimately we're going most conference wins it. So just because we're playing one night doesn't mean we're guaranteed to play, you know, next weekend. So we got to try to win them when we can. So that's what we're rolling with.
Go to Dan at Lewis.
Certainly the medical side of things is on the doctors, I think, in terms of what goes on there. But I think we're just trying, I'm weak day by day, week by week, you know, reminding the guys to be due diligent about who they're hanging out with, where they're going, how they're taking care of things. You know, we got to protect the team, and we want to do that. I was all for being purely online learning and just having athletic teams back, because then you have so much more control that when they open up things and there's other kids around, it makes it even more difficult. And now restaurants are open again here, so that becomes challenging. I'm like, hey, you got to watch how much you're eating. So that just conversations with the guys. And so, and then we built a couple weeks in on the MEVA schedule if you needed to reschedule. And, you know, if that happens, we'll figure it out when it happens from that standpoint. And then the lineup part, I'm trying to win. So, like, you know, we might put a piece here or there, but it's like, you know, we need to get – if you go watch us play, we have, like, four sophomores playing. You know, two freshmen at one time, two sophomores. We're trying to get game reps. These guys hadn't played in a year. And so how do these guys get better in real-life situations and real-match stuff? And the window for that's pretty small and can get even smaller if games get canceled. So every rep is huge in a live scenario of a real match. So.
Yeah. And Jay, close out with you.
You know, the doctor thing is a standard across the board. None of us are going to tell the doctor what they can and can't do. So we leave that up to the people that are paid at a higher scale than we are. I'll tell you honestly what we do in our gym. There was a football team, and I think it was Buffalo, that they did a different scenario every week of an unanticipated change or challenge. And we kind of are starting that here in our gym, where every Monday is going to be something different. You know, maybe it's half the starters can't play that day and then put new guys in, or maybe it's the coaching staff can't be there. How are you going to run a practice? Or maybe it's, you know, you only have one ball because the rest of them were, you know, inundated with COVID, whatever we come up with. And obviously we have some weeks to plan ahead, but, you know, just trying to give them a chance to, you know, kind of regroup and figure out how to solve that challenge. And overcome it. And so I think the more things that we do that are possible scenarios that we might see down the line, at least it gives them some sort of advantage in saying, hey, we've done this before. We know how it feels. It's not that big of a deal, and they can move forward. I think the biggest challenge that most teams face is when they don't know something, or they've never seen something, and all of a sudden they're in that situation. So not only trying to execute, you know, what they already know how to do, but now they're trying to figure something out and completely, you know, on a random basis, and the other team's just taking it to them. So that we're trying to do that in our gym. You know, whether or not it's going to pay off in spades, I don't know, but I think it's going to be something that we can use as a tool for us to be successful.
Yeah. Great. Well, before closing out the show, I wanted to make this statement, and you know, definitely if you are aware of the situation, definitely respond. Don't feel like you need to, but former Ball State standout Chris Bierman passed away over the weekend at age 53. Across social media, it's pretty apparent that he had impacted quite a few players in the game at all levels. I mean, junior, collegiate, international, national teams. So just wanted to acknowledge that situation and say Godspeed to you, Chris, and your family. And there's a great tribute by Vinny Lopes over at Off the Block blog.com. But if you guys wanted to say something else, I wanted to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, just thoughts and prayers to his family and, you know, all the volleyball community that's connected with him, and certainly a difficult time. And he was a great player, a great coach, a great mentor to a lot of people. So,
well said.
All right, gentlemen, thanks again for being on College Volleyball Weekly, week two. But although it's only our first episode of College Volleyball Weekly, I'd like to thank David Hunt of Pepperdine University, Dan Finn of Lewis University, and Jay Hosick of George Mason University. Looking forward to what this week brings, so we can chat it up again next Monday.
Thanks, Rob.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Viral Volley Podcast. Be sure to follow Rob at Rob on the Mic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or at robonthemic.com. Check you next time.